All right, so welcome back, everybody, to another episode. My name is Dr. Paul, here with Dr. Stavros, and we're here with Jessica Darris, who is an IMG student who just recently matched into neuro, which is very impressive. And we're going to ask her some questions, and she's going to share some of her insights with you to hopefully give you some motivation and inspiration if you are in the process of going through the next upcoming match, or if you're in med school and you just want some tips. So, Jessica, thanks for joining us today.
Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. So this is our first time meeting. We don't really know much about you. So why don't you give us and the viewers a little bit of a background, where you're from, where you went to undergrad, and then we'll move on from there.
Yeah, I'm Jessica. I am from Cleveland, Ohio, originally. I'll be the first doctor in my family, so this whole process has kind of been very interesting for me.
Yeah, nice.
I did undergrad in Grand Rapids, Michigan at a small private college called Calvin College, which is now Calvin University. I studied biology and German, so I was a double major. And coming out of undergrad, my GPA was real bad, so I wasn't going to get into medical school straight away. So I applied to a master's program at Case Western Reserve in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. So I got my master's in medical physiology with an area of concentration in clinical neuroscience. It was a newer master's like post-bac program, so we were the second class when I came in. And then I applied to medical school after graduating from my master's program, and I went to St. George's University, and yeah, I just matched into neurology.
So. Awesome. So what, when you decided you were gonna go to med school, did you have like a short list of the schools that you were looking at, or was St. George's the only one you looked at?
No, so I mean, my plan the whole time was to go to medical school. Like, I've wanted to go to medical school since I was like a child. I really struggled through my undergrad, so I wanted to apply straight out of undergrad, but like I said, like, I wasn't ready. So my initial advisor, who I didn't like didn't give me good information, so I switched to an advisor who told me about master's post-bac programs. And even though I improved my GPA, my MCAT score was still not great, because I took the older MCAT that still was a double digit mm-hmm. number, not this three digit number that I don't understand yeah. anymore. Mm-hmm. So I applied to a bunch of schools. I applied to USMD schools and DO schools. But I have a mentor that works at Montefiore in the Bronx. And he mm-hmm. put me in contact with I think it was like the dean of education or something at Albert Einstein, and he kind of suggested the Caribbean schools to me. So I didn't really know much about Caribbean schools, but he's like, you need to apply here, here, and here. So I applied to four Caribbean schools as well. So I didn't get into any schools in the United States, to be honest. I applied to four Caribbean schools. I got into the one that I currently am attending. I got into another one. And then they MERP'd me or whatever. It's like medical education readiness program at another one. Mm-hmm. And then I got rejected by the fourth one. So
wow.
Out of those four, the school that I decided to choose is the one that I'm currently at. And it's, I don't know, they call it like the Harvard or the Caribbean or something like that.
Very strong school, yeah.
Yeah, strong. Yeah, that's good.
So, yeah, I mean, if I didn't know how the whole process works. So like, I'm very grateful to that, that doctor who told me about the Caribbean schools, because otherwise I really wouldn't have yeah. known about it otherwise.
Yeah. Awesome. So. Awesome. So just as an aside, not even really relevant, but before you went, did you visit the island before you went? Or
no.
So you went first day of school or first week of school, just
yeah.
dove in. How was that as a culture shock for you?
I mean, okay, so I'm from Ohio, right, which is cold, like 8 months out of the year. So I was totally happy being in sunshine and whatever. And honestly, I was preparing for the worst. I had no like sense of like what the campus really looked like. Like, yeah, you see pictures, whatever. But I was like, oh, we're going to live in like whatever, not dorms and like just these weird houses. And so I was kind of, I had this idea of like something that was way different than what it actually was. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was interesting to get used to, because I didn't have a car down there, and like I've always had, you know, means of transportation. So getting used to that was a bit tough initially, but I loved living there. I mean, so it was in Grenada, and
yep.
I loved it.
Good.
No snow.
No.
I really,
no. No. But being from the Midwest, when December rolls around, because I'm from Windsor, which is near Detroit, so
yeah.
similar weather. when November, December roll around and it doesn't get cold. It's really weird, right?
Yeah, but I don't hate it. That's the thing.
Oh, I didn't hate it either. I'm not complaining. Not complaining at all.
What's confusing is when they start decorating for Christmas. I'm like, wait.
It doesn't feel right, right? No. There's trees and lights and it's, no, it doesn't make sense. I agree.
Like when I moved down to the islands, it was for me as from New York, it was weird at first because there was a small island, but then I got used to it. I got to know my neighbors. They were fishermen, so they got like fresh fish every day. And I was like, you know, I'm going to acclimate accordingly and then enjoy the ride down here. Because when you go back to the States, reality kicks in again, right? You can't just move from class. You have to travel. You have to commute and everything. So
yeah,
I enjoyed the best I could.
Now, you don't know Dr. Stavros, but the fact that his neighbors were giving him fresh fish is no surprise to me whatsoever. That sounds
my landlord gave us mangoes and stuff, and like they were the best mangoes, and like he gave us bananas and like the fruit down there. I was like, I'm never gonna eat bananas again.
The fresh fruit was really good off of trees, but the grocery store fruit, I don't know where I was, it was always really subpar. So thank God for mangoes. That's all I have to say. Yeah. So when you got to school, so it's a good school. Were they aggressive in explaining to you the importance of USMLE and the scores and prepared you early? How did that feel?
So I am documented and treated for ADHD, and I have been for like, I started to get tested when I was a kid and we just stopped for some reason. So like when they knew that kind of about my academic background that I did struggle through undergrad, they put me in this thing called AEP, which I don't even remember what the acronym stands for anymore, but pretty much like I was required to go to like these tutoring sessions every week, just because I did have kind of a subpar undergraduate GPA. To be totally honest, I don't know if it was like helpful, but really, I mean, a lot of what they said at the beginning was, yeah, like you need to, you know, perform at the top of your class, like all this stuff. And like, we're kind of, the one thing that I guess I didn't really appreciate about it was the tactic that they used to like encourage you was mostly fear. Mm-hmm. Being like, listen, like if you're not gonna get this like far, or you're not gonna achieve this, like you should just probably just like not even like attempt.
Really?
And I'm not a huge fan of that, just because I mean, I don't respond positively to it. So like, yeah, they got their message across. However, I think that sometimes what sucks in those situations and circumstances is the people like me who constantly have either average or below average scores. And like, I've never been a straight A student a day in my life until my third year with clinicals. So it's kind of hard to find your way when they're catering more towards like those people who like are either average or above and like can like kill tests and like do great. And like, I'm not that person. Yeah. So like, that was tough. That was really tough for me, and I barely made it off the island, honestly, like term five, like I struggled. But I mean, when you did need help, they did offer like certain services like tutoring and whatever, and like test taking skills. With respect to step one, they kind of like sent you on your way as far as studying goes. I personally got a tutor, which I regret to this day because it was a lot of money that I couldn't afford to spend. And so like, I don't know, as far as like the prep that they recommend for step one, like they recommend that Kansas City program or something like that. Mm-hmm. A lot of people did that. Some people did tutoring. Some people just like studied on their own. They did provide you with UWorld, which was helpful.
Mm-hmm. When did they recommend you guys start UWorld? Early on?
Yeah. I mean, not like term one, but like they recommend you do it early enough. Mm-hmm. Some people who are, you know, like gunners, like start like day one.
Sure,
like
sure.
Me, I mean,
sure.
I did not study for step one in a way that was very helpful.
So,
but yeah.
So they use fear, which I mean, I think a lot of schools do that, and I agree. I don't think it's the best approach. How did you respond to that? Did you respond to that with, you know, whatever, that's just what you're gonna do, I'm gonna do my thing, or did it inspire you to sort of work harder? Like, how did you respond to that? Because I know a lot of students don't appreciate that. So I'm interested to see your perspective.
I mean, in all honesty, I didn't really rely on the advice of my school that much. Like, there were certain things, yeah, that was helpful, but like, because of like my mentor that I had in the Bronx, you know, like if I had questions or something, he could put me into contact with some people that were helpful.
That's
so great. I asked people like outside of it who had been in my situation, for advice more so than like people who are just concerned about numbers. And if you're below what they want, then like, you're like, well, you're screwed. So, Yeah, I mean, step one, like I said, for me, the way I studied, I also had like my old mentality towards like studying, which was I had to learn everything before I could do questions, which is wrong. I know that now, that's wrong. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't get through UWorld at, like, more than once my first go around. Like I said, I got a tutor, and I mean, so many things I did I regret with respect to myself last time.
I mean, you know, we learn as we go. So yeah. Let's talk specifically about your dedicated step one prep. When did you actually make that decision? Okay, this is when I'm going to start going hardcore with step one. And then what did it look like for you during that entire dedicated period?
Okay, so I ended on the island May 2018. And then I came back to the States, and I did my dedicated studying in Florida for 6 weeks. I had started with this tutoring company a little bit before I got off of the island. And the thing is like, like I said, I was never really great at test taking. And so like reason why I wanted to get a tutor was because I was like, oh, well, like maybe they'll help me with respect to like my test taking skills and reading through questions better. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so one thing that I kind of like looking back at it now and like how I prepped for step two versus how I prepped for step one, I didn't start practice exams early enough. I had about 6 weeks, and the thing that kind of stuck too was I applied for testing accommodations because I've been getting testing accommodations for like my entire higher education, so like 10 years, right, of like getting these testing accommodations because I had the appropriate documentation. However, I got denied testing accommodations, so I wasn't given the extra test time that I'm used to. I was given extra break time, so I was kind of preparing in a way that like sort of preparing for the worst, like to not get that extra test time. But that made it really hard because that's how I was used to test taking. And yeah, I mean, I did the tutoring, like I think 3 times a week or 2 times a week. And I did UWorld questions, but the way that I did UWorld questions is like never really timed. I don't think I actually went back and reviewed them well enough. And it was 6 weeks of like, it was more like 3 weeks of like being like, yeah, I got this. Okay, it's gonna go great. And then like the last 3 weeks when I finally took my first practice test, it was more like panic studying. Like, all right, here's my score. I am so far from where I need to be. Like, how am I gonna get up here when I'm like way down here, right? Mm-hmm. So like, I think it was panicking more than it was like proper studying. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, it was tough. It was a tough test. And like,
oh yeah.
Oh, it was hard. But I also like right afterwards I was like done. I was just like cooked, and I like left the country for like 2 weeks.
You gotta do what you gotta do, right? So what were the tutoring? I know you said you were sort of looking for some help with your test taking skills, and this is just my own curiosity. What it was, one-on-one tutoring, is that what it was?
Yeah, it was.
What did that look like? What was it, just Q&A's? What was it?
Yeah, it was Q&A's, and like he kind of, and again, you know, I'm not going to say the company that I went with,
of course,
just because that's fine. It does work with some people, but sure. It just happened to not be the best choice for me.
Sure.
It was like we'd go through questions and like we'd walk through them slowly, being like, okay, here's what you need to pay attention to. Here's keywords for this. It kind of does. I don't know if you're familiar with AMBOSS, but like the way AMBOSS works, like how they like highlight certain questions and what you should pay attention to. It's pretty much like that's what they did for me, like in a tutoring session.
Got it.
It wasn't really like lessons. It was mostly just like looking at questions and doing questions.
Strategy
and
sort
like
of.
And so I think my mistake was that I relied more on doing questions with my tutor than I did like doing them by myself, just because I hated doing them so much.
So would you recommend someone who might be considering that one-on-one tutor sort of approach, just go through them yourself, make the mistakes yourself, and then sort of go through them on your own? Looking back, is that what you would have done?
I mean, honestly, like, I mean, looking back at it now, I kind of wish I never got a tutor.
That's okay.
Because it's just like I was going about it in a way that I thought was the best way possible, and he never really, like, he gave me a schedule to like look at as far as like, here's what you should be doing, like do this many whatever. And like the thing is like I think that the tutor kind of made his schedule based on how he studied, and I think that that was kind of like the
issue.
the big problem is the disconnect of, like, look, like, I get it, obviously, like, I got, like, the upper tier tutor who, like, got, like, a million on the test, and, like, that's how he studied, and that works for him, but, like, that's not my learning style. I am so ADHD, it's comical, so, like, I need to, like, touch things and, like, write things and color things and, like, do things, like, make it more physical for me. And so I think that that's kind of where the disconnect was, that he was kind of going off of, like, this is how I got a 260 or whatever he got. Like, so obviously, I'm sure it worked for some people, but it just didn't work for me.
Well, and it's important because a lot of students out there listening and watching, they always ask, right? They call us, contact us, contact you, everybody else. And they say, what's the best way to approach the exam? Well, what's best for me could be different for you than Dr. Paul. You know, everyone has different ways of absorbing the information. So if it's not working for you, readjust and keep going. Don't keep hammering it because it might not work for you at the end of the day.
Right. Right. And I'm the type of person that will use like a bajillion different books, because if I don't understand it in one book, then I'll look through like four or five different other ones to see like how they explain it. That way, like, I understand it. And like, some people don't do that. They're like, no, it's only this. You can only do this. And I'm like, I will use as many resources to the cows come home as long as it gets me to understand it.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Because we always tell students, because students have this issue where they see someone else using a book that they've never seen and they go buy it. And then they just focus on that. And then they go to the next. I think your point is really good. If you're not understanding something in one book, getting another book to see it from a different perspective, I think it's a great idea. But yeah, a lot of students, they have shiny object syndrome where they just see the next thing and they want that. So yeah, I'm glad you brought that point up. So one of the most common questions that we got, and I put up a Q&A and students wanted to know, so we're gonna ask, and you said you were cool with this. If you can tell us your step one and your step two CK scores, and I also want to point out, you matched into neuro, so very impressive. Yeah. So let's hear it.
Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'll tell you what my step one score is, and then I'll tell you my step two score and tell you the difference that I did as far as studying. So my step one score was a 197.
Okay.
So when I saw that, you know, 194 is passing, and I was like, oh, okay, well, looks like I'm done here.
Did you want to get into neuro? Sort of jump in. Did you want neuro?
So my, you know, just like be like 90% of medical students that come into medical school is like, I'm gonna be a surgeon. Like, that's what's gonna happen.
Yeah, of course.
Like, that's originally, I did want to do surgery, and I wanted to do neurosurgery, which is like, you know, way up there. So I was like, well, all right, bye. Like, that's not happening anymore. But like, I've always liked neuro, so like, I was like, okay, well, I'll spend my time focused like on neuro. That next year, the way that I changed my studying, I started doing UWorld questions from day one on my clinicals. I asked for a lot of help. I got together with friends who got scores better than me to see how they studied. I did UWorld at least two times. I did all my NBME practice tests. I got A's on every single practice test, not every practice test, but every exam except for one. Where I got a B on it, and I did a lot more questions and asked for a lot more help, and my score improvement from step one was 30 points, so I got a 227 on my second.
But you asked for help, though. See, that a lot of people out there don't ask for help.
Well, I think people get so embarrassed, too, because, like, I mean, a 197, like, people would, like, complain about their scores, and I'm like, listen, I passed the 3 points.
Like, well, you're a neuro now. I mean, that's so unbelievable. Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah. And I think the thing that, like, sucks, too, is, like, you know, for instance, my school's like, here's, if you get this step one score, good luck matching. It's not going to happen. So, like, you have, like, that in the back of your mind.
Sure.
So you're like, well, all right, bye.
Do,
like,
I keep going, or do I just call it a day?
Yeah, it's hard. And someone messaged me the other day on my Instagram saying, like, you know, I always thought low step one score is your journey's over. And I was like, that's so not true, because, like, your journey's over when you give up. And, like,
agree 100%. Awesome message. Yeah.
Yeah,
we've, over the years, because we've been doing this since 2009, so we've dealt with thousands of students, and the number of students who, you know, they've scored poorly on step one, and poorly as well is, you know, it's obviously subjective, but, you know, anything probably below average, someone considers to be poor, and they always ask, should I quit? And absolutely not. I mean, this is just a testament to, if you keep working hard and keep trying, that you can do it. So, I mean, I'm happier that you did poorly in match than I am when I've heard all the other students who scored 250s in match, because it's more impressive, to be honest with you, and more people need to hear this sort of story. So let me just thank you for even just reaching out to us and having the courage to, you know, admit that, because most people wouldn't. So
And I mean, yeah, it's the reality of my situation. The thing is, since my first semester in college, I failed chemistry. I failed a class in college, and I was like, all right, I'm actually not going to go to medical school. And that first advisor was like, yeah, this is not for you. And I was like, I don't take no for an answer because I don't think it's productive.
And
I agree.
I know it's fine. But like, I was like, no, but like, give me alternatives, because like, there's more than one way to skin a cat. Like, if I can't go in through the front door, like I'll go through a window or whatever to get to where I need to go. And I think like that stubbornness has helped me. But in the same like light, like also asking for help has been like my biggest challenge, because like it's embarrassing. Like it really is. Like when you tell people that I have like a 197, they're like, they think that you're like stupid or something. Like, oh, why can't you score better? But that's not the case at all. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very tough, because, you know, I deal with many students myself, like Dr. Paul, and they have that defeated mentality. They go, I'm just going to give up. And schools are a big part of it, too, because they maybe the people who are guiding them aren't the right people to do so, because it's cookie cutter. It's like, well, if you don't have that certain number, then, oh, well, you know, best of luck, go into psych or something like that. So we're very happy we have you on board, because that message has to be spread worldwide, because we feel bad for those that want to give up. I mean, there is no plan B, right? You didn't give up. You did what you had to do. Asked for help, and you kept pushing through, and here you are now in a university program. Congrats.
Yeah, where did you match, by the way? Somewhere in Kansas
City? University of Missouri, Kansas City.
Awesome.
Oh, perfect.
How did you like Kansas City?
So I was there for less than 24 hours.
Yeah. I visited one weekend. It's not a crazy busy town, so you have lots of time to focus on your work.
I mean, they're coming off the Super Bowl victory, though, so I feel like the hype in like the town, you know, it's going to be like real big from like summertime and football season, if there is a football season.
Very true. That's true. You have baseball in Kansas, so that's nice too. You have sports. Mm-hmm. That's nice.
Yeah.
All right. Awesome. So inspiring. That is amazing. Let's talk clinicals. Where'd you do your clinicals?
So I did my first 6 months of my third year in Brooklyn, New York. Mm-hmm. I did surgery and internal medicine. I was in East Flatbush, and then I moved to Miami, which is where I am currently, in February of last year, and I finished off my third year there. And then I'm completing my fourth year here, which I have like 6 weeks left.
6 weeks. What's your last rotation?
Online coursework.
Online, same as everybody else right now, right?
Everyone's online.
Were you hoping to stay in Miami?
I mean, so I interviewed at a program down here, Cleveland Clinic, Florida. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I would have been totally fine with only having to move 40 minutes north.
Yeah.
So, like, plus my sister lives down here. And again, like, the weather is not bad at all.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, at least you're used to the Midwest weather. So it's not like you're going from living in, growing up in Florida to those harsh, harsh winters. Oh, so you didn't do any sort of rotations at that hospital that you matched. Okay.
I didn't do any audition rotations.
Okay. So how many interviews did you have in total?
So I was invited for 11 interviews, and I completed 10 interviews.
Okay.
9 of them were in neurology, and 1 of them was in internal medicine. And the only reason I even took the internal medicine one was because it was in Ohio, and I wanted to see my parents before Christmas.
Fair enough. I'm assuming that it wasn't your number one choice.
No.
So, you know, aside from scores, one of the important things that students oftentimes neglect is the well-roundedness of your application. So was there anything that came up in discussion more than once when you were interviewing that you did during your clinicals or just in your life in general that you think helped you as a candidate that other people might think, oh, wow, I could do that too, or something outside the box maybe?
Yeah, so after I graduated from my master's program, I did have a job as a clinical research coordinator. Which was an amazing opportunity because I learned how to start clinical trials from like the ground up and help run them. And at that time, I also helped residents write papers, teach them how to use like citation software and all that stuff. And that was a phenomenal opportunity because like I think that makes me, it made me as a candidate like a good asset, being like, okay, like I know the paperwork, I know the stuff that goes into starting FDA drug trials and how to run them and what you need.
Right.
And I think that a lot of people, even PIs, sometimes don't understand like the work that a clinical research coordinator does.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's hard work. And learning how to write papers is also huge because like I had all the resources that I still saved from my old job as far as like writing case reports, and like I didn't have any case report opportunities during my clinicals, but like I think that's huge. Publication, yeah, it's a good thing to have on your application, but I don't think it's 100% necessary. I had three. Mm-hmm. So I had one from undergrad that was published in 2015. I had two from my clinical research days that was published in 2016 and 2017. So I had one every year. And then also during my clinicals for internal medicine, the hospital that I was at, they do this thing called chief students, which is pretty much you kind of become responsible, not even responsible, but like you make sure everyone gets their work done and all that stuff. So it's like a leadership role. And so that was good because every question that I got asked about, tell me about a time that you had conflict. Like, okay, like I have a million stories for you now. So I think that that stood out. But in all honesty, too, one question that I consistently got asked about was like something that I had in my interests, which I always tell people like on my Instagram, like don't lie about what you're interested in, but like do put something interesting. Because I put herpetology, which is snakes.
Really?
I'm really fascinated by snakes. And so like that was literally every single interview I got asked about that.
No kidding.
So, then I'm like the weird girl who likes snakes, like that kind of like a little bit more memorable.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We keep telling students you don't want to just blend in, right? So yeah. You don't want to just do everything everyone else is doing. You want to do something that stands out. So the interesting thing is out of everyone we've interviewed IMGs who matched this season, something everybody has said is they've taken a leadership role, which I think is really important. You just said it as well. And then the second thing is everyone has something unique that they did that helped them stand out. So if you're watching or listening, if you're watching on YouTube or you're listening to this, keep those things in mind, right? Stand out in some way and make sure you take the leadership role. Awesome. Anything else that came up frequently?
I mean, like, okay, so I've had a job also since I was 16. My dad owns a dry cleaners. So like I've done so much more than just be in school. Granted, I've been in school for like
a long time.
I just turned 30, so like my entire 20s, right? Mm-hmm. Like
happy birthday.
Yeah. I'm like still coming to terms with the fact that like I'm done with my 20s. but like I also went off of experiences from my dry cleaning because like in my personal statement I talked about it. The fact that like I learned more about how to deal with people working at my dad's dry cleaners. And I still take those lessons that I've learned since the age of 16 into how I interact with people day to day. But like the classrooms taught me medicine, but the dry cleaners taught me how to deal with people. So I think also that kind of helped me stand out a little bit. So, awesome. You know, just being honest about who you are as a person. And like, again, I just don't lie. Like I hear people who like say things that like, oh, like I kind of maybe did this, but you need to be able to talk in a way that like shows that you know what you're actually talking about.
Of course. Yeah. Awesome.
And that's a huge message because a lot of students and people out there, they look for certain programs to write their personal statement. I'm like, guys, this is your residency, right? Wouldn't you want to take this opportunity to write something down from you to speak to everyone who's reading? That's a big thing. If people don't do that, and that's how they suffer. So just take your time to write it down from the heart.
Yeah, and work on it early too, because like,
yeah,
it's put your time into it. It's worth it.
Yeah, because you might just sit down to write it last minute and then you're gonna forget things that otherwise could have made a big difference on your application, right? So
right.
Start early is a great tip. So start early. Letters of recommendation, was that something that you found helped you at all?
So the thing is, with respect to when I actually got to do my elective for neurology, it was after applications were due. So I didn't even have a neurology letter of recommendation until like mid-October.
Okay.
And so one thing that I think makes it tough, especially for people who go to Caribbean schools, because you have that whole rolling admissions, right? So you have people who start in January who often have a lot more time to study for stuff versus the people who start in August. So like I didn't even start my electives until September. And so that kind of sucks because like neurology, like you should probably have like a neurology letter, right? But like I actually got put in contact with, again, through my mentor and at Montefiore, he put me in contact with somebody that is involved in neurology. And like this person was a godsend just because like, honestly, he gave me so much good advice that with respect to how to write my like letter, or like not my letter, it's not my personal statement, but like what I should say to program directors, which I wrote every single program director as soon as I submitted my application to be like, hey, here's what's going on with like the way that my school works as far as scheduling goes. Like I'm not gonna be able to complete my neurology elective until later, which means that I'll send you my letter later. So like if I didn't do that, I think that I wouldn't have gotten nearly as many invitations for interview as if, you know, since I did do that, like I literally got an invite for interview like the day after I submitted my application.
Oh, wow.
And then you just keep people updated. So I think that, yeah, letters are huge. They are important, especially because like if you're applying to a certain specialty, like if you don't have a letter from that specialty, right, then how do they know that you're actually gonna like
it? Of course, yeah.
So that's yeah, right. I mean, I think letters, and some of my letters, you know, spoke to the fact that she was in a leadership position. Like I chose my letters in a manner that I knew that they would say, okay, like this is a person we want. Like I was, they liked working with me, whatever. And I mean, probably shouldn't say this, but you know, some people don't always write, the doctors don't always write your letters. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they do ask you to write them and they tweak them. Yeah, and so if you do have to or find yourself in that position, make it sound like it's from a doctor and not just you being like, I'm the best. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
12 out of 10.
Yeah. No, those are good tips. I like the idea of staying in contact with people and letting them know what's going on, because that's,
of course, yeah,
like most students won't take that initiative. And like you said, you might not have gotten half the interviews. So that's, and that could be the, where you might have matched, right? So that could have been the make or break for you, really.
Well, and it's work. That's the thing that sucks, right? It's
like, of course.
You have to actually put the work in. So like, sure. I've had, I think, 55 neuro programs. I wrote every single program director.
Wow.
Yeah.
But you got interviews at 20% of them, right? 10 interviews in neuro?
Yeah, that's
so approximately.
That's yeah.
Yeah, wow. That's good fast math for me. I'm surprised that wasn't wrong. So if you could pick one thing to recommend to IMGs who are watching or listening, the one, I know there's not one most important thing, but what one thing that they could do that would boost them or give them the best chance, is there one thing you could come up with?
You mean for just in general or for like a residency?
Yeah, for residency.
Okay, yeah. One thing I would say, honestly, get a membership to matchresident.com.
Good advice.
Because that was recommended to me at the beginning of my third year. And that's also a big reason why that I think I got the interviews that I did. Because like the thing is it saves you A, so much time, and B, so much frustration going through Frida, being like, okay, let me see like who likes what. Because like you put in your stats and then it gives you a list of like, okay, based on your stats in the last 5 years, like here's what we've seen, right? So like there are more than 66 neurology programs in the nation, but like because of what my step scores were, and because I was an IMG and whatever, it gave me 66 programs that I would have the most positive outcome for applying to. And like that's outside of like maybe two programs, that's where I got invites for invitations.
Wow, awesome.
Or for interviews, sorry. Okay. Yeah. So I mean, as an IMG, 100% get a membership, and you don't have to get every single specialty. You can just get one specialty, right, which is like, I think $100 or something like that.
Well worth it.
But
yeah,
it was great. Plus they help you with your rank order list. Like they just have so many resources that like take a little bit of the frustration out of the process.
Awesome. Awesome. And one final question. What's your ultimate plan with neuro?
So I really like concussions. Which sounds messed up, but like the whole area of like traumatic brain injury and sports neurology is like a big, big area that's like starting to really grow.
Yeah.
And I've played sports most of my life. I've had a couple concussions. So I really like that area of neurology, even though it is kind of like, you know, hot topic as far as like politics and like sports and like,
yeah,
all that stuff.
Yeah.
But I really, really like that area
awesome.
Of neurology.
Awesome.
So ultimately, maybe do work in that and research. Yeah, that's kind of the plan right
cool.
now.
Cool, awesome. One last thing that just popped up. I know you were doing a lot of videos documenting your journey through the whole match process on Instagram, which I thought was really, really awesome and helpful. Do you plan to keep documenting? Because it seems like you're natural in front of the camera. Are you planning on continuing with that?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that that's the plan. I'm horrible at Instagram because like I post like maybe like every 2 weeks because I don't, this sounds so bad, I don't care enough.
Sure, sure.
To like sit there and like post stuff.
Well, if you're just doing it for fun, then yeah, I understand.
Yeah.
But
I mean, you know, like I want to be able to help people, as many people as possible, just because like I know what it's like to be in that position of
sure.
like, oh gosh, like I'm not this killer student, whatever. But like if I can continue to document, which I will, just because I think sometimes, yeah, there's resources out there like to help you with the process of like residency applications, all that stuff. But sometimes there's so many resources that it's, you kind of get lost in the thick of it. So the plan is to continue to document my, my life, I guess.
Awesome. Awesome. Dr. Stavros, Dr. Stavros, do you have any questions?
No questions. No. I'm just fascinated. That's amazing. The journey, and we're very happy to spread the message out to everybody out there. And hopefully have you back on later in the year, right? When you settle into your first year residency, love to hear all the ups and downs and the inside of neuro residency.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really happy to share my experience.
Thank you so much. And just to sort of mirror what Dr. Stavros said, super inspirational. I'm happy you didn't quit, because it sounds like you are the right person that has earned her way into residency. So I'm happy for you. So congrats. And like Dr. Stavros said, keep in touch. Let's do this again sometime once you've started. And good luck to you.
For sure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care and be safe out there. Huh?
Likewise. Wash your hands.
Okay. We'll do. Bye-bye. Take care.
Bye. Thank you. We'll be right back.